Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel, and it's a delight to have you with us on this rainy Thursday, assuming that it is raining where you are, because it's raining where we are. Each day we...
No, you're right.
You kind of cocked your head.
That was a convoluted sentence. You had to cock your head.
Yeah, I understand. From your forecast, it seems like it's raining pretty much everywhere.
Well, you know, if it's raining, we can hear this station literally around the world. So if it's raining every place, there is a big news story.
Yes, you're right.
All right.
That's an innocuous opening comment.
Nothing's innocuous
it's
here.
It's 9/11, and there's already a no mas moment here on the program. It's amazing.
Joining us for the discussion, WAMC newsman Ray Graff. Good morning, Raymond. Mm-hmm. Former Daily Freeman publisher Ira Fussfeld, and now publisher emeritus. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you. You're probably already sorry you invited me.
Not at all. And
not yet.
And also joining us is University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter and panel regular, Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
How are you? So I feel like I missed so much yesterday because I wasn't here and I didn't get to talk about all the election stuff, but I know you all did in fine fashion. So
yes, ad nauseum.
It's fascinating stuff. So let's start off instead let's talk about the health care law. The president went to Texas yesterday, ventured into Texas to tout the health care law. And also, meanwhile, Kathleen Sebelius was at a hearing yesterday and said that everything is fine, and they're not going to take it down, even though there were calls to say, you know, if it's still screwing up, why don't we just take it down for a little bit, fix it, and then put it back up?
Oh, God, common sense.
So is that the way they should go? Or is at this point his only tact is make sure this thing is fixed, and at the same time, as he said, grind it out and keep putting a favorable light on it and reminding people why Obamacare was passed in the first place, or should, in fact, they suspend it at the risk of that being a different kind of black mark on their resume?
What I don't understand is, I guess my answer to your question is, it seems to me, as Rosemary alluded to, of the common sense thing would be to, all right, we keep on trying to work on this while we keep it up and running. And all that does is keep crashing it.
Correct.
So maybe we pull it back, take it back to the lab, dust it up, figure it out, and then put it back on. I don't know. I mean, that does seem to be the common sense.
How would Apple do it? Apple, you know, is a well-run company, unlike our government. How would they have done it? They would have, kept it up and then had the real team working on, you know, Apple 1.2 or something?
Well, that's what happens. They'll put out a new operating system. And when the OS 7 came out, and I had, a 5 phone, and so you could get the 7, and within 24 or 36 hours, they had a 7.01 because they immediately heard there were some fixes that needed to be made.
Yeah.
I don't know if that translates. Listen, we're way beyond this. I'm just stunned that all of these problems happened to begin with. I just find it very difficult to believe that the White House did not engage people who knew what they were doing and who could not anticipate what all of the issues were going to be to get a quality site up and running. I can't get past that part of it.
They could have solved a lot of trouble just by calling it, you know, healthcare.gov beta when they put it out. And then everyone cut them some slack for a month or two.
Speaking again of how Apple might have done it.
I just think the bigger takeaway right now is the you will not have to change your plan. You can keep your plan, and which remark that has been repeated over and over and over again, and which is now being qualified because it's not it's not exactly that.
We've not really talked much about that here, and that is really interesting. Is it a complete lie? Is it something the insurance companies are doing? There are some people who are losing their plan, but they're getting something better.
Call it anything else but a lie because the out that he's using now, which is to say, well, we never said that. Everybody knows that the insurance plans for individuals can be revoked or revised on a year-by-year basis.
Correct.
That may well be true, but that's still not a caveat that he offered during the run-up to this thing. And I can't see any way he can nuance. Unless you're going to say, it was a political promise, and nobody keeps a political promise. But this just seemed more this was not a political thing. This was a factual thing that he was describing to allay people's fears, and people bought into it. I just think it's terrible. It's a black mark on his presidency.
You go into Texas, which is the state that has the most people.
Heart of darkness, as we call it.
Yes, the heart of darkness, and the largest state to refuse of those to refuse to participate. And you try to sell it. And meanwhile, you have this message. And also, meanwhile, more and more members of your own party are ganging up against you. And we saw this in the Sebelius hearing, where it was just as many Democrats as Republicans who were saying, shouldn't we just fix it and take it down?
But again, there's two or three parts to this. One is, as we've discussed before, a lot of the states did not choose to participate, the Republican governor states, generally speaking. And so had they been able to do that, would that have changed the manner in which this thing worked or didn't work? Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that if every state in the union cooperatively entered into this and it moved a lot smoother because it was being done on a state-by-state basis, that's great. That issue would not have arisen. But this other issue still would have come up, which was, you said I could keep my health plan.
Yeah.
Now, they will argue with justification that the number of people that this impacts is relatively small, if you can call a couple of million in a country our size relatively small, but it is in that sense. But that's still a lot of people who are now scrambling around. I mean, it's hard to justify it by saying, well, now you're going to have a better plan when you have an elderly couple that now has to cover pregnancy. Or something that they're never going. They would not have cherry picked on their own.
Right.
I have a journalistic question, and this could come off as a tangent, but I'm gonna go with it anyway. And that is, in this article in the New York Times, I just want to read a paragraph. It says, against a backdrop of closer than expected election results in Virginia that some attributed to opposition to the health law, Mr. Obama again expressed regret for the troubles of the federal website that had prevented many people from enrolling for insurance. Are we reading too much into the Virginia election results? I mean, the Democrat did win.
I heard Frank Rich last night, who I happen to respect, and he pointed out, perhaps others have too, McAuliffe was expected, the Democrat, to win by a fairly wide margin because Virginia has changed, its demographics have changed, and much of the McAuliffe vote would have been in the suburbs of Washington, where there was particular anger against Republicans because of the shutdown of the government.
Right.
And what happened was McAuliffe barely won, and I think it was 7% of the vote went to a third-party candidate. And had that candidate not existed, it's very possible that the Republican would have won that race. And had that happened, it's believed that Obamacare would have been the reason. That would have turned it around in a relatively close race. So I think there is something to read into it, specifically on the impact of Obamacare on Democrats and how it could impact them going forward. And it has taken away the Democratic steam that they were able to generate against Republicans as a result of the shutdown.
Meanwhile, back in Studio position 5.
Yeah.
Rosemary,
yes,
rolling her eyes.
Yes. I'm not sure what she's going to say.
Because it's so, that's so convoluted. I mean,
which part?
The part that you would vote against a Democratic candidate for governor of Virginia because you don't like what the Democratic president passed, even though it's the law of the land. I don't believe people read or know that much about politics in this country. I think it had to do with other things. The candidates themselves, I find that really unconvincing. Vincent.
Was there significant exit polling? I mean,
I follow
Ira's argument, and it makes sense, but was there exit polling to back that up?
I thought I heard that, but I can't quote it. I think that I believe it comes from that
What's
place.
What's the turnout for that election? That
well, we talked about this yesterday.
I had. Yeah.
You can draw so many inferences so fast from an election. You know, we were talking about the Republicans in Nassau County and how, you know, it's a bellwether or this. We talked about this yesterday. You know, you can read whatever you want. It's like Nostradamus quatrains.
I think they just drew that conclusion, if not from exit polls, from the fact that the polling is generally pretty good these days.
I agree with that.
And the polling showed McAuliffe was going to be an easier winner than he was. And the result was not as it was tighter than that. And so I think that people are looking around. The pundits are saying, what happened between the last poll and Election Day? Mm-hmm. And the answer was that the Obamacare criticism has increased and it impacted.
I mean,
community.
I can make an argument that it was because he's a close ally of the Clintons, including Hillary, the Clintons campaign there. And people don't want to see Hillary running. There's a lot of negative imaging of her in Virginia. So they crushed a friend.
Well, in a quote-unquote purple state situation, I mean, wouldn't it come down to the person? Wouldn't it just say, well, you know what? I'm a Democrat. He's a Democrat. I'm going to vote for him, but he's all right.
Okay, here's the question that I have, the political question I have. Obama is flailing. His secretary of health is flailing. She looks horrible on television in these hearings. So where are the House Republicans who are so adamant to get this bill reversed, that they shut down the government? Why are they not making more hay out of this whole mess? Missing something?
Wasn't this the same strategy that the Democrats used of let them kill themselves?
Perhaps.
I'm not sure I agree that they're not trying to make hay out of it. And certainly these congressmen and senators at these hearings, and I always think that the word hearing is misnomer.
grandstand.
Yeah, they grandstand. I mean, they don't have any idea what
they're not listening.
Yeah, at
they
all.
Don't want to give their speech.
Yeah, nor do they care. Yeah, they just want to say what they have to say.
Oh, I think that the drumbeat is such. I think Joe is right. They don't have to push it too far for it to start rolling down the hill, and it is already rolling down the hill. And they're going to see if Obama can wiggle his way out of it. The only way that's going to wiggle his way out of it is if this website is up and running by the end of the month, as they've promised, and that the people who are losing their health care, who thought they weren't going to, the promise they weren't going to lose it, are somehow going to come out, in fact, better than they were, that the system is going to be jiggered in some way to make them in better shape. Ray believes that I'm in a drunken stupor.
Yeah. No. You just said jigger. Immediately thought of.
I was just telling my friend, the mayor of Toronto, this, and he thought it made perfect sense.
Well, we'll talk about him in a few minutes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I do have some information on the exit polling in Virginia, and then we'll finish up in the conversation about Sebelius's comments before the hearing, or quote-unquote hearing, yesterday, and we'll take your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org after this short break.
Support comes from Sunwood Builders, Amherst. Over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting the Round the Lake Challenge, providing 30 missions to explore Lake George. LGLC.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. Rosemary Armeo is here, as is Ira Fussfeld, Ray Graff, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So according to the Washington Post, the network exit poll depicted how Virginia's electorate on Tuesday was friendlier to the Republican candidate than most pre-election surveys. He performed better among Republicans and independents than expected, kept the race relatively close among women voters, and performed well enough in the central and western parts of the state. Now, getting down to reason beyond those top-line findings, the political climate in Virginia, according to these polls, seems to not have been as bad as things appeared in late October. Voters in the governor's election did not blame Republicans much more than President Obama for the government shutdown, nor did they sour on the GOP incumbent, both factors that figured to hurt the Republicans' chances.
And Obamacare, did you say?
Nothing.
Hold on.
That's how you ask the question, eh?
Yeah.
And then,
this I guess is not. Good
radio. Yeah, I know it is good radio. No, it's so funny. Like in the fourth paragraph, where we start talking about coal country and the gender graph.
If it would have been in the lead.
Yeah, it would have been in the lead. Yeah. So, my guess is that the climate and the government shutdown and the issues leading to the government shutdown, which I assume would include, Obamacare.
Well, it's a good thing this program is on tape because you can erase that.
You don't have to edit it out. Thank
See,
goodness.
See, I rolled my eyes. You have to listen to me when I
did.
Or
I
watch
did
me.
Cite Frank Rich.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, and he might still be in a drunken stupor from all those days reviewing restaurants.
It could be.
He was a theater. He was a theater. That's right.
But he used to go to the bar at halftime.
Well, the magic word today is drunken stupor.
Yes.
Say the secret way.
How do you feel about the health care law that was enacted in 2010? That was the question that they asked.
Morton Kondracki.
Yeah, what did they say?
How do you feel?
Morton Downey.
So of Democrats, 88% supported it, and of Republicans, 81% opposed it. Hmm. So there you go.
Don't know. I also seem to remember reading that, generally speaking, people thought McAuliffe and Cuccinelli were not particularly good people or good candidates. That they were, it was a hold your nose election, and even aside from all these other issues,
Don't think it was a bellwether for Obamacare. Well, that's I just want to repeat that. I've never thought it. I've not read one compelling thing that makes me want to see it a different way.
Okay,
so
let's go on.
All right, we will. I promise we'll move on. So, but let us go back to Kathleen Sebelius, who is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and was appearing before the Senate Finance Committee yesterday. And as Rosemary said, and I don't think this is an unfair characterization, seems to be flailing.
Appalling performance.
It is fascinating because she is not only rejecting that they take time to repair the problems, she is again making dates and saying that even though there are still error messages that come up, and she has a list of a couple of hundred functional fixes that had to be made to the website so it would work smoothly for most users by November 30th, a deadline set by the administration. I think it seems politically deadlines would be just harrowing, but I don't know.
Listen, I can't believe that she is not sitting there having been vetted and having gone through all sorts of practice drills by people in the administration. Here's the question you're going to get. Here's what you're going to say. Yep. And I just look at her thinking to myself, she is uncomfortable because she can't speak what she would really like to say. She is being a good soldier, and she is taking the bullet.
So how good? Will she fall on the sword in a few days?
I last time we talked about this, I said I didn't think somebody should be fired just for the sake of giving somebody a head on a platter. But I still believe that, but I think it's less likely that my view is going to hold sway. I think at the end of the day, she's now becoming a symbol for this failed plan.
Yeah, she should. It's her department. I mean, you read the TikTok that was in the Washington Post on how this came down. There were massive problems. She didn't A, publicize them. She didn't B, do anything about them. She's now sitting in front of Congress. She'd be better off, to use your term, Joe, to make a date and go out with one of those guys rather than sit there and apologize again and again and say, I don't know. I'm sick of it. It's just appalling to watch. She's not doing a good job. That's not to absolve anybody else or other people, but...
Meanwhile, documents were released last night by House investigators suggesting that the Obama administration officials knew even before the marketplaces opened for business on October 1st that the computer system was not going to be able to handle anywhere near the anticipated demand. The testing bulletin suggested the website, as of September 30th, could handle only about 1,000 users.
Okay. Well, the heads should roll. That is ridiculous.
How soon will we hear calls for impeachment?
Well, I think we've already heard those.
They've
stopped yet.
We're going to take a break and get some news from
anyone in his office. There's no impeachment coming down.
From the way to go out on a low note.
I'm sorry. I thought we were out.
Pull the pin on that grenade and let it go.
Don't worry, we're on.
Let's go to break. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff, Ira Fussfeld, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So let us talk about the mayor of Toronto. This is a story that is making world headlines. I don't believe that we would, under normal circumstances, would talk about the mayor of Toronto. But here we are, despite the call for him to step aside after he publicly admitted Tuesday using crack cocaine, Toronto Mayor Rob Ford said he will not step down and will run for re-election next year. I was elected to do a job, and that is exactly what I'm going to continue to do, he said during a news conference Tuesday. We live in a democracy, and October 27, 2014, I want the people of this great city to decide if they want Rob Ford to be their mayor. Earlier Tuesday, after months of dodging allegations, he told reporters that he smoked crack about a year ago, probably, he said, quote, during a drunken stupor.
Yeah.
Which is one of the better excuses I've ever heard. My students come up with good ones. I never got that. I didn't do my homework because I was in a drunken stupor.
I just have to take the optimistic view that there is going to be enough pressure applied on this guy that he is going to have to step down. I mean, the council, I mean, I noticed in, that the city councilor, as opposed to councilman John Fillion, has at the very least is saying that Ford has to take a leave of absence. But it's hard for me to believe he can survive this. I don't care what the circumstances are and what country or city it is. You can't have your mayor admitting, A, the crack, or 1A, that you were in a drunken stupor, as if this was, I was in a drunken stupor. This is not, it's like I had eggs and bacon for breakfast this morning.
Well, I just remember two things, but one being, like, the drunken stupor would be a story in and of itself, right?
I
mean,
exactly.
in most major American cities, and I assume even in Canadian cities, that if it was said that the mayor or whoever was in a drunken stupor maybe regularly, that would be a story
itself. Well, indeed, the Toronto Star has been writing about the mayor's problems, and drunkenness has been at the core of that. They've been writing about this since May, I think.
Right.
So drunkenness is one thing. This is a step up now.
To raise the ante a little bit.
But is being drunk, it's not a crime. So there would be nothing in the law that would require him to step down. My question is there a criminal charge likely to come out of the police are involved out of his smoking?
Right.
Crack.
I was just going to ask the same question. Isn't it not illegal to be caught on video drinking?
Correct. So if the police were to level charges against him, then I think
it's tough to prove, though, from a cell phone video that, in fact, what he was doing was smoking crack.
I mean,
he admitted to smoking crack.
Yeah.
He was in a drunken stupor. He could have been, you know, smoking dust from behind a. If I'm a lawyer,
there are witnesses too.
I say, you know what? Prove that this was correct.
And okay, so you're right. With lawyers, you know, anything can be proven. But my point is that if there is a charge, or more likely, if there is a conviction on that charge or a plea, then some sort of constitutional, I don't know what it is in Canada, or some sort of
The Queen comes over and makes a determination.
But then it seems like it would kick in and he would have to leave. You can't hold office if you're a convicted felon or something.
How could the public in the city of Toronto want somebody to be their figurehead, their leader, figuratively and literally, and want him to represent their city on a daily basis? When is the next head of state going to visit Toronto, or whatever the big person is visiting Toronto for the obligatory handshake?
It would be
handshake.
As if the mayor of Washington were a crackhead. Oh,
gee,
oh
that
wait.
Happened, didn't it?
Yeah.
So what's
and they reelected him.
Okay, I can't remember
they
the
did.
Scenario.
They
reelected him.
He went out.
But he was sent to jail first.
Yes.
And okay, he paid his time. They chose to put him back in, but the act of smoking the crack got him out of office. No.
Yes, I believe. Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The other thing here, which I just he said nothing funny about this, but
there's a lot funny about it.
I know. I mean, but it is sad. But you. He went after the reporters, and he said, "Well, the problem is you didn't ask the right questions."
Yeah.
no, I'm not an addict. And no, I do not do drugs. I made mistakes in the past, and all I can do is apologize. While he,
or resign.
I do not use crack cocaine, nor am I an addict of crack cocaine. And that is what he told reporters in May.
Well, I'm going to use this in my reporting classes and how to ask questions. Did they ever ask the question, have you ever used crack cocaine? Because being an addict and using crack cocaine is not the same as doing crack cocaine even once.
Yeah. Well, they did say, do you do drugs? And he said no.
And he's, it's just like, did you have sex with that woman? And it's how you define sex, right? And
right.
Here it's doing drugs. He's saying, no, it was an occasional thing. I was just in a drunk stupor and it just happened, you know? So I think that's one thing. There's nothing wrong with asking really specific questions.
Listen, the reporting on this, now that he has made this admission, has been spot on. The people
right.
who did the reporting were meticulous. If you read some of the material about how they reported, they put themselves in danger by associating with some of the, shall we say, shady characters. And they were not afraid. They had a story that they felt needed to be reported. So the fallback position for people in politics often is to say the reporters had it wrong. And unfortunately, in these days where press credibility is low, people that's a charge that can be resonating. Because people are inclined to believe that. They don't feel the press has credibility. But for him to say you didn't ask the right questions is just, it doesn't pass
that,
the
that
smell
was
test.
Really well put. That was really well put, Ira. Here's another aspect of it, though. The public is highly entertained by this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Gawker, the
yes.
the expose site, gets hold of the, they didn't show it, but they told people, we've seen this video, and he's there, he's well, crazy, and he's small. So help us raise the money, because we got to buy it from the blackmailers who want to sell to us. They raised $200,000 to buy this tape.
And they still don't have it. And I think that's important when we talk about.
Please have it.
Right. And even the mayor,
it's a digital video.
It's a digital
right.
video.
It is a digital video.
And the even the mayor said, I want to see that. I want to see this video, because he claims he's never seen it. Though, as described by those who have seen it both at the Star and at Gawker, that there is an incoherent man claimed to be Ford who is smoking crack and ranting on a number of subjects. But my question
ahead.
About him stepping down. Don't you think that, like, if this tape is released and when it's released, then you're done, right? I mean, that's the difference between, because right now it's all imaginative.
well,
when it comes to when you see it.
It might convince the handful that still need that affirmation. But, I mean, I think we're saying this is an entertaining story. I mean, I think it part of it is entertaining, particularly for those of us who watch The Daily Show or
right.
programs like that. I mean, this is a big, fat guy who doesn't look like your standard politician.
Or standard crack addict, for that matter.
Well, I mean, he just looks funny. I mean, he looks funny. And to see him, I mean, that's why I don't remember if we said it on or off the air. Somebody pointed out it was sad that Chris Farley is no longer alive, because this is Chris Farley could play this guy and make a real. I don't know how he could satirize it, because it almost satirizes itself. But sure, it's entertaining. We're watching this guy squirm, and we have a feeling in this world of let's watch somebody else suffer and for our entertainment.
I think the guy must be high not to be getting out of office right now. You don't need to see a tape. We didn't have to see a tape of Elliot with his woman in order for him to be removed from office. This is just him.
I just think that
at
some point in the near future, somebody from some country is mm-hmm. going to have to go to Toronto for some sort of an event at which the mayor traditionally would be the first one off the plane at the steps of the plane to say hello. And people are not going to want to go near. They're going to come to Toronto and say, don't get me photographed in the same frame with this.
Well,
with
businessmen
this mayor.
Are already saying they think it will hurt investment chances in the city.
So to me, the two issues are the actual charges of, and that's what I was talking about. I mean, once you think the video goes out and people see it and say, okay, and they make their own mind up that maybe charges will be filed, but also pressure on him, because it's ultimately right now without those charges, it's his decision of whether he stays or goes, and it would seem to me that would
well, unless there's some method in Toronto politics that they can get him out of office, and
yeah.
I don't know what that's
step
involved.
Out and there won't be
I mean,
any
we,
charges.
Yeah.
We
were talking
not even that.
Yeah.
You know.
We were talking about this during the break, which is I just don't understand. You would think that the normal rational response, at least this would be my response, would be just one of complete embarrassment, and you think you would just quit run and hide for as many years as you could.
Well, I don't know that I can use it on this air, but Jon Stewart played the clip and then said afterwards, and they came back to him with that Jon Stewart look about him, and he said, this guy has got the greatest pair of, and you know what the next word of, and that's a first.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Most people would resign in embarrassment, and this guy is plunging right ahead.
Isn't the end of civilization sad?
We'll talk more about the end of civilization after this short break, and we'll go to your letters as well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from American Institute for Economic Research, Great Barrington, presenting the Women's Financial Empowerment Series, November 12th at 6 p.m. Protect yourself against bank fraud. AIER.org/events for reservations. Saugerties Furniture, Saugerties, offering the comfort sleeper sofa from American leather, engineered with no bars, springs, and three mattress options, including Tempur-Pedic. SaugertiesFurniture.com. And H. Houston Sun True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals, Woodstock, New York. Locally owned since 1932, providing tools and materials for home care projects. True Value, start right, start here. HHoust.com.
Let's go through the mailbag before we move on to other issues. Let's start with Deborah, who writes, of course, the site, and of course, we're talking about healthcare.org. Of course, the site should stay up. As Ira pointed out, even Apple doesn't get it right the first time. Programs and sites need real-life experience to find what needs to be improved. Those uncooperative red states made it all the worse. Increased volume makes a difference. In the end, we will be a healthier and more productive nation.
She should go before Congress because I think she would do better than Kathleen.
Nicely said.
Yes. then James writes, there is no saving face for the administration at this point. This is just an incredible embarrassment all around and shows why nationwide single payer should have been the route from the beginning instead of trying to appease so many different interests. Suspend it until it's fixed. Why put people through unnecessary problems? I haven't had health care in 20 years, so you can imagine how anxious I am at this point to take advantage of the Affordable Health Care Act. But as soon as I hear the site is up and working perfectly and not a minute sooner. Julius writes, the key to successful IP projects, large or small, is good project management. There has to be one principal project manager who is aware of every aspect of the project, something which apparently was not the case with the Affordable Care Act and certainly evidenced in that piece that we read from in the Washington Post. On Monday.
And that's the guy who should be fired.
The project manager?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the problem, though, is that there wasn't one person in charge of the whole thing?
That's a problem.
If there were a project manager, yeah. But.
I don't want to read that one on the air.
Was that sent from Toronto?
Yeah. Sibelius is a policy person. With all due respect, Rosemary, I think it's unfair to say that she isn't doing a good job. Unfortunately, she's head of the agency, and the problem is the technology end of the program. Frankly, the politicians are pulling what little they understand of the tech problems out of their ears. As a Dem, I wish she would be more combative, but she is what she is, a careful policy person.
Sorry, her job is secretary of the department, not just policy. You're responsible for it all. If you can't do it yourself, you hire somebody who can, and she did not. So.
Then John says, while the ACA website rollout was terrible, you have not even acknowledged that significant improvements have been made. Just minutes before the roundtable began, NPR ran a story about a very satisfied Obamacare customer who used the website, found an insurance plan that improved her coverage over her former plan and saved her money. Similar success stories have been all over the news and web. Well, that's true, but let us not forget that yesterday, before this committee, Kathleen Sebelius said there are over 100 fixes that need to be made to the system. So I think we're talking.
Did I also hear her or someone say they are now signing up 17,000 people an hour? Or did I just make that up? Because I know I heard that.
I don't have that number in front of me. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I should testify. Yeah. You're doing
and by the way, apropos of not this, I'm told by natives that it's called, they call it Toronto, not Toronto. We Americans
Toronto.
Call it. Yeah, they don't use the Toronto. T. The second T is silent. I don't. I this is when you watch too many hockey games, as you hear this.
It sounds like you're slurring your speech.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I just came from Rob Ford's house.
Yeah. In your drunken stupor, and, right. And here you go.
Did a little crack. He's good to go.
Where are the McKenzie brothers when you need them?
Yeah, hey, take off.
The Great White North takes on quite a different meaning. Do you want to talk about Twitter? Do you want to talk Twitter, or do you want to talk about the elderly?
The elderly.
Yeah, I'm an elderly.
We have to talk about old people. We'll talk about Twitter tomorrow.
Okay.
Because you want to see how it did today.
Yeah, we'll see.
The only thing about Twitter, we didn't talk about it on the media show. There are now surveys that showing that Twitter is not as
widely used for
among young people in particular. Or was
no,
it everybody?
No, no, no.
It was everybody.
Among everybody. If you looked at just young people, it was hugely overwhelming.
But generally speaking, Twitter had less of an impact, and that created some sighs of anguish in my shop because we put a lot of stock in Twitter.
I think it's great. On election night,
I
was able to follow up to the minute Jimmy Vilkind and others, their tweets, and it was great.
Great stuff.
Seems like we are talking about Twitter, but it is interesting that they are now on going to Wall Street. They have never really shown, as I understand it, a profit. So this is going public purely on potential, on what's coming down the pike. And it's really interesting. Well,
remember what happened when Facebook's IPO?
But
guess what?
Inflated.
But it's now being sold at a price about $10 or $11 over its IPO price.
Yeah, it was solid. Yeah, it was solid.
We want to talk about this is a opinion piece that was written for the Washington Post that Rosemary sent to me, and it is entitled, "We Need to Stop Coddling the Elderly."
Stop for a moment. Give me definition of elderly.
You're in.
Look, I know I've been in since I was 30.
Well, I'm the oldest person in the room.
Okay.
So
I want a year because I see news reports.
Over 65.
Okay, because I've seen news reports on TV. An elderly driver.
According
the person
to
was
this
56. That's elderly? Come
according
on.
According to this report, 65.
Okay, 65.
Over 65 is how they're
I would question that definition.
Okay. Two analysts at the Federal Reserve Bank at St. Louis have produced an important study that should, but probably won't, alter the climate for Washington's stalemated budget debate. The study demolishes the widespread notion that older Americans need exceptional protection against spending cuts because they're poorer and more vulnerable than everyone else. Coupled with the elderly's voting power, this perception has intimidated both parties and put Social Security and Medicare, which dominate federal spending, off limits to any serious discussion or change. This is from Robert Samuelson.
Fascinating.
Why? Because it challenges
conventional views, and it came out at the same time that a poll was done among elderly people. I can't define that exactly, about how they felt about changes to Social Security. And, of course, they're opposed vehemently to any kind of change, except for you can charge rich older people a little bit more for the tax. That's the only thing they would go for. Don't raise the age. Don't cut the benefits. And this opinion piece, and I think it's backed up with some evidence, indicates that maybe we ought to be talking at it and looking at this program, that the elderly they've changed. They're not like they were in the 1930s when the program began.
Well, they're talking about that Depression-era stereotype of being uniformly poor and sickly and helpless. And the point of this piece is, like under 65 Americans, those 65 and over are diverse. Some are poor, some are sickly, some are dependent, but many more are financially comfortable, even rich, in reasonably good health, and more self-reliant than not, with life expectancy of
decades.
19 years beyond 65.
Decades beyond when you're...
Most face many years of government-subsidized retirement. The stereotype survives because it's politically useful. It protects those subsidies. It discourages us from asking, are they all desirable or deserved, for whom, at what age? One of the things that struck me about this is thinking about it from a broadcasting standpoint, because the people like 65 and over, for many entities, I mean, that's our That those are the people we're looking for, because for advertising, advertisers are often looking for that demographic because they have more expendable income. Mm-hmm. They're retired. They in some cases are comfortable. And so why do we look at it in that sense for that? But when it comes to our programs, we say, okay, they're all poor and destitute.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see how you can deny that the definition of elderly is different today than it was
absolutely
50 years ago for all the reasons that you stated.
Health, money.
Yes, including.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is why eventually they're going to have to make change, particularly given the fragility of the Social Security system, that they're going to have to change those kinds of definitions. I think the question is, if they newly define elderly, let's say from 65 to 68 or 70, will people who do fit the old definition of elderly, will they somehow fall through the cracks in those years between 65 and 68 or 70, whatever they changed?
And Samuelson suggests that, you know, that it's a diverse group, so we need to take care of the people who are in whatever age group, really.
40,
who
45, whatever.
Who are in trouble because of lack of money or lack of health. But
I really hate the term elderly a lot, because I don't know one person 65 who I would consider to be elderly.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just
I agree with you.
I have this fight with
term.
My mother all the time, who's 88, and I just said, you know, like, by any definition, that's old, Mom. What do you want?
All right, but okay, old, that's fine. But I just said,
so you're old, Ray.
Elderly.
You like that better?
I'm 49. No, yes, but I am old. I've been old since 30.
Doesn't elderly bring to mind the picture of the old man or woman who is stumbling along with the cane?
Artie Johnson in a trench coat.
Well, that was for different.
Or Tim Conway or something
like that.
Yeah, so those are different.
I don't like that term at all.
You know, the other thing,
what term do you like?
Ancient.
Ray, you say you're 49?
Yeah.
Keep your eye in the mailbox, because AARP is coming.
I don't care.
That starts with age 50, which throws
That's
everybody
right.
for
when
a
I
loop.
Start getting the flyers from The Undertaker, then I'll...
Ray Graff, one of the ancients. Yes.
You know, you were talking about advertisers. I always find it instructive if you're trying to determine who watches a program on TV, to watch the commercials, because the advertisers are going after a demographic. And you will see, for example, I think I may have mentioned it the last time I was here, on the nightly news program.
Oh, my God. Every prescription drug.
Every drugs and Medicare ads. And in the younger programs, like the kind that my son writes for, you'll see the kids' ads, the young adult ads.
Yeah.
And so that'll tell you something. You may find yourself in a strange neighborhood if you're watching a program that is usually not watched by your peers, of age peers. So I've quieted. No, I'm over 65.
I've
so
been in that neighborhood.
You have to now discount everything I say.
No,
hang on, Myra. Lawrence Welk is on.
And it is. And it is all.
Did you make the warm milk for me? As I
asked. It is all perception. I mean, my father, before he passed, but he was 86, and he would always refer to, you know, when these old people.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Okay.
It's okay if you are one.
Yeah. Right.
My grandmother said she was going to do voluntary work, as she put it, when she got old, and she hadn't signed up for anything when she died at 101.
Well, I tell you, it is fun to go up to that movie theater and say, two seniors, please, at age 60, even doing it last year, because most of the places, 62 is considered old enough.
Yeah.
So.
I got my first senior discount at a store.
At 49?
Yeah. Well, they see the gray hair.
It must have been for smokes.
And then the worst part was I was at an event with my first grader at a Halloween thing. And
is
one of her friends said, is that your grandfather?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, ow, that hurts. Oh, boy.
Well,
that'll get you attention.
And then you shot them. Want to thank everybody for participating this morning. We welcome your comments. As always, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back tomorrow. Coming up next, we will talk to the very funny Bill Maher. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.